Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Facilitator. Our comments can be brief. The answers to your questions in your non-paper, for which many thanks, are essentially outlined in UK Working Paper 15 from the PrepCom in August. You'll find the answers to your questions on page 2 of that document. I would like to highlight just a number of key points now. That is, number one, the mandate needs to focus both on the potential benefits for the Convention and potential for uses contrary to the Convention. There needs to be flexibility in how the process works. There needs to be a dynamic process as well as a static one. The dynamic one comes from the fact that science and technology changes, and issues may arise in the next intersessional period that the scientific and technology review process would wish and should draw to the attention of states parties. So it does have to have the flexibility to respond. That's number one and fundamental to us. Number two, clearly there will be issues that the states parties themselves are of concern and of interest, both to the benefits aspect and to the uses contrary aspect, and therefore we'll wish guidance and advice on that. As to those issues, we don't necessarily, in fact shouldn't, lay them all out in concrete now and fix it indefinitely, but some suggestions for those topics have been outlined in the UK Working Paper 17, Swedish Paper Working Paper 20, US Working Paper 18. One of the other issues that could be discussed in this body is the question of what a template for a code of conduct for scientists might look like, as proposed in Working Paper 31 by China. This would be an area that could be discussed usefully in an S&T context. It's also fundamental, my last point, sir, is that the diverse range of expertise and knowledge required for this process resides in a very broad community. Within government, in the private sector, research bodies, and of course academia, and that expertise needs to be a fundamental part of an S&T process. So I will conclude my comments there.